United States against Geer is our next case for argument this morning, number 5. Mr. Cook.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Dan Cook, attorney with the Federal Defender's Office for the Central District of Illinois. I represent the appellant, Jonathan Geer, in this appeal. There are three issues. First is whether Mr. Geer's prior conviction for reckless discharge of a firearm amounts to a crime of violence under the guidelines. The other two deal with 5K1.1 motion for downward departure and the reasonableness of Mr. Geer's sentence. I was hoping that I could just cite Smith and Jimenez-Gonzalez on the first issue and be done with it. Doesn't sound like that's the case. But when we filed our brief in June, we essentially argued that reckless discharge of a firearm is not a crime of violence because it has a mens rea of recklessness. 3 months later, this court decided Smith that held that crimes with the mens rea of recklessness are not violent felonies under the Armed Career Criminal Act. And just about a month and a half ago in Jimenez v. Gonzalez, the immigration context, this court held that reckless discharge of a firearm did not amount to a crime of violence.
Well, you heard the questions I asked in the second case, which dealt with Wisconsin's statute. Here we have Illinois' statute. Can one, as Illinois understands this law, can one violate it by doing what Plaxico Burress did, which is shooting himself in the thigh because he didn't really know he was pulling the trigger? Or does it require an intentional step, that is, intentionally shooting, reckless with respect to consequence?
No.
What do the Illinois courts say about what this statute requires?
Well, the Illinois courts make a clear distinction between aggravated discharge of a firearm and reckless discharge of a firearm. In fact, the statutory language does that. If you read the language of aggravated discharge of a firearm, it specifically says knowingly or intentionally discharges.
All right. Well, so if the statute requires the knowing or intentional firing, I mean, Plaxico Burress then isn't guilty in Illinois. He may or may not be guilty in Wisconsin. Why isn't that enough? Intentional discharge of a firearm, reckless with respect to consequence. Why isn't that enough? And the Supreme Court says in Begay, what we're trying to do in Smith and Jimenez, is carry out the Supreme Court's decision in Begay that there has to be an intentional, aggressive component to the state crime. And intentionally firing a firearm sounds like an intentional and aggressive component.
And that's aggravated discharge of a firearm in Illinois, not reckless discharge of a firearm. If there's a few cases that make this crystal clear that are cited throughout the briefs. One is People v. Casp, which had to do with the defendant arguing it was a proportionality of penalties argument where he argued that he was convicted of aggravated discharge of a firearm. He argued that the penalty was greater for that offense than reckless discharge, but reckless discharge was more serious. Apparently that's a constitutional problem in Illinois. The court essentially said no, that's wrong because aggravated discharge is more serious, and we know it's more serious because it's an intentional crime, whereas reckless discharge has a mens rea of recklessness. So the court made very clear this distinction, at least in Illinois, of an intentional discharge and a reckless discharge. There's another case, People v. Williams. And in People v. Williams, it cites an Illinois Supreme Court case, Fournier. And the Illinois Supreme Court held that reckless discharge and aggravated discharge are mutually inconsistent. People v. Williams was a situation where the defendant was convicted of involuntary manslaughter, which is unintentional, and aggravated discharge, which is intentional. The court vacated the convictions because the verdicts were inconsistent because one was an unintentional crime and the other was an intentional crime. So in Illinois, at least, it is very clear that if you intentionally discharge a firearm, it's aggravated. If you recklessly discharge, it's reckless. So I think maybe, I don't know what the case is said in Wisconsin, but Illinois, it's very clear this distinction.
Well, what are we permitted to know about the facts here?
Well, this is a plain air review. Wasn't contested, so we just know what the indictment says. and there's a police report.
Well, we know from Shepard that we can't look at police reports.
Right. So all we have is the
indictment. You say the indictment is in the record?
No.
Is in the record?
No. The only thing that's in it's in the PSR. There's a statement in the PSR that says the indictment alleged this. But other than that,
the indictment is
no. There's no one because it wasn't contested below.
Well, since there was no objection below and we're on plain error review, what doesn't that mean that you lose? If in order to sort this out, you know, let's put it this way. Not knowing what the indictment says, your client might well have committed a violent felony. That depends on what the indictment says. And therefore, since we're on plain error review, how can we reverse?
We disagree based on the definitions of Illinois law. I mean, if he intentionally discharged, it would be aggravated discharge.
What if the indictment embroidered the elements with facts that show that this is within the federal conception?
My understanding is that under a categorical approach, you only look at those things if there's different ways to violate a statute.
Yeah, well, there are.
Obviously, yeah.
But they would all
be. We've gone over them. Intentionally firing, reckless with regard to consequences, is, for federal purposes, a crime of violence. So we now need to know whether Gere has been convicted of that.
But we know that based on the definitions Illinois has provided us.
We don't know that based on the elements of the state offense. You were here when I was discussing Taylor with your predecessor. The whole point of Taylor is that even though the state burglary statute didn't have as an element whether somebody entered a residence, a federal court could still look to find out whether that was so in order to come within the federal definition. It wasn't pertinent as the state saw it, but it's pertinent as the federal government sees it.
But
I don't understand why this would be any different.
Because the statute in Taylor had multiple ways to violate it. Here there's only one way to violate it.
It didn't. The statute in Taylor, the thing the Supreme Court is worried about, the definition of the burglary under Tennessee laws, I believe it was entering a building with intent to commit a felony. There wasn't a separate crime of entering a dwelling with intent to commit a felony. That was the whole point of Taylor.
It's not how I remember it. I mean, I think Smith talks about this. Smith says specifically that when there's only one way to violate a statute, there's no need to look at anything else, and that's this case. You have two elements. This is the simplest statute you can imagine. You have reckless discharge and endangerment. That's it.
But they're such vague terms.
I mean, recklessness is defined by statute in Illinois. I mean, to the extent it's vague.
What is it? What is it? What is the definition?
A conscious disregard of a substantial and justifiable risk that circumstances exist or that a result will follow. Such disregard constitutes a gross deviation from the standard of care which a reasonable person would exercise in the situation. Act performed recklessly is performed wantonly.
And they have the cases fleshed out, that very vague definition?
Essentially, I think all Illinois has said is that shooting a firearm in the air is reckless, not aggravated. There's a case where an individual testified that he shot a firearm at a group of people but above their heads. The court said that could be reckless to shoot above a person's head. Therefore, there should have been a jury instruction on that. So I think in Illinois, at least, it's clear that you can even shoot a gun towards people, and it can still be reckless.
I mean, it should have been a jury instruction.
No. So.
But it could have been aggravated.
It could have. The jury could have found aggravated.
So the indictment here, for all we know, would show that this fit within the. What we would consider to be, a violent felony.
I don't think so, because it was charged as reckless. I mean, if it's charged as reckless, if Smith is right, this is an easy case. it's charged as aggravated.
The example you gave, you're shooting, you know, it's like you're shooting, a person has an apple in his mouth, and you're shooting the apple, right? Something like that. Don't you think we could find that to be a violent felony, even if Illinois regarded it as reckless?
I don't think so. And I don't know how that's possible. I mean, the point of Begay, you know, there's this two-pronged where we look at, is it similar in risk and is it similar in kind? I mean, risk spells essentially did away with the risk provision, I think, with the fleeing. I mean, everything seems to be risky these days. But with respect to the kind, I mean, those enumerated offenses are all specific intent crimes. I think that's Begay's purpose, and that's why Smith's right. That's the distinction between these reckless crimes and the enumerated crimes, is the mens rea. And if the mens rea is different, case closed.
So, but what about the case we discussed earlier where someone shoots at the lighted window? Doesn't actually see a person there, not aiming at a person, doesn't care whether he hits a person or not. Is it your view that that's not a violent felony?
Well, I think it depends on how it's charged. I mean, in Illinois, you can charge that under 24-1.2A1 as discharging a firearm into a...
It's charged as a misdemeanor, but the information lays out all these facts, and he pleads guilty.
A misdemeanor...
Violent felony?
Well, I think it depends on the mens rea of the misdemeanor. Is it in a specific intent?
Words. I'm giving you the facts. Suppose it's plea is a misdemeanor battery, but in fact what... Or it's a misdemeanor...
Recklessness.
Damage to property. But actually, he was shooting at a lighted window, and he didn't know whether there was a person behind it or not. But for some reason, they decided to charge him with just a misdemeanor. So couldn't the federal court say, well, you were charged with a misdemeanor, but in fact, it's from the indictment itself or your guilty plea, this was a violent... felony.
Well, I don't know if this is set. Well, if it's a misdemeanor, then
well,
is it punishable by a year?
Some general felony.
Okay. So
reckless endangerment, something like that. But in fact, it's as I described.
I think the difference is that when you say, in fact, it's this, that's not, in fact, what it was. Because it's, I mean, it's recklessness. That's...
Pardon?
I mean, if the mens rea is recklessness, that's what it is.
I wish you wouldn't use words like mens rea. Don't you think that shooting at a lighted window, not caring whether there's a person behind it, isn't that a violent felony? You don't think so?
I think it can be, yes.
What do you mean it can be? That's awfully vague.
Well, if the government believes it can prove...
No, the person has pleaded guilty to this. He's pleaded guilty. Whatever he was charged with, he said in his guilty plea, yes, I shot at the window. I knew it was lighted. I knew there could be a person behind it. I didn't care.
I think that's reckless.
That's not a violent felony?
Not under Smith.
No, that can't be right. Because if you hit the person, that's first-degree murder.
Or it could be involuntary manslaughter.
No,
under Illinois.
No. You aim at a window. You don't know whether there's a person behind it. Maybe the curtains are drawn. You see it's lighted. You shoot and you kill a person.
Right.
That's first-degree murder.
Even without intent to kill?
Yes.
Yes.
I don't know about
Go
that.
Go back to your, you know,
yep.
First year.
Thank you, Mr. Cook.
This book.
Mr. Carter.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Mark Carter, and I appear on behalf of the United States. It's our view, Your Honors, that reckless discharge of a firearm is a violent felony and that the district court properly enhanced the defendant's sentence with that prior conviction for reckless discharge of a firearm.
What has the Supreme Court of Illinois said about the Plaxico Burries case? I want to know, because, of course, this is just a salacious detail, whether Plaxico Burries violated this statute by shooting himself in the thigh.
Well, I don't know if the Illinois Supreme Court's addressed a fact pattern on that. My best judgment on that, Your Honor, would be that in the Plaxico...
Well, remember why I'm asking this question. I want to know, under the state court's construction of this statute, whether you can violate it by recklessly discharging the gun as opposed to intentionally discharging a gun and being reckless with respect to whether you hit someone. That's the technical question I'm asking, and I'm interested in what the Supreme Court of Illinois might have said about it.
I'm unaware of any state court opinion that has addressed that issue specifically. It's our view that...
Don't we need to know if the kind of recklessness covered by this statute is just letting the gun go off in your pants, then it's miles away from the kinds of things that Judge Posner is talking about, or even what this may have been, which is deliberately firing at people and missing.
You do need to know.
Pardon?
You do need to know that. And under the Plaxico Burress hypothetical, where he doesn't realize his hand's on the trigger, that would be a negligent or accidental act, not a reckless act.
I'm perfectly willing to call what Plaxico Burress did Fred or Peter. I just need to know whether the Supreme Court of Illinois thinks that a reckless discharge comes within their definition of recklessness, or whether instead they think this statute is about intentionally aggressive acts that are reckless with respect to the consequence. I'm trying to figure out how the Supreme Court of Illinois understands this statute. That's all.
I can't provide Your Honor with an opinion that reveals the Supreme Court's position on that based on the definition of recklessness and the definition of reckless discharge of a firearm. It seems categorically that reckless discharge of a firearm is a crime of violence because it requires purposeful, aggressive, and violent conduct by using a tool that's designed to kill, a firearm, and deliberately firing the trigger. And discharging a firearm is inherently an aggressive, violent act. So recklessly discharging a firearm would be a purposeful, aggressive, and violent action.
Only if the Supreme Court requires that the discharge be intentional. Right? If Plaxico Burress takes the gun out of his waistband and drops it on the floor and it fires, because the act of dropping it on the floor causes a malfunction of its mechanism, we might say that he was reckless, but we wouldn't say that he committed first-degree murder if somebody died as a result. Right? I'm just trying to figure out how the Supreme Court of Illinois understands this statute, not what recklessness or negligence means in an ideal world.
See, your opponent is arguing that it should be read narrowly because there's this other statute, this aggravated
discharge of a firearm.
So what is the difference between, why are they separate statutes?
Illinois law defines aggravated discharge of a firearm as an intentional, there's three or four different alternative ways it can be committed, but it requires an intentional.
What's the difference between it and the reckless endangerment?
Difference is in the mental states. You can commit reckless discharge of a firearm by recklessly discharging the firearm, or intentionally or knowingly discharging the firearm. Aggravated discharge calls for a higher penalty and is limited to those instances where a person intentionally or knowingly fires at an occupied building or vehicle.
So is it your position that the Illinois statute for reckless discharge of a firearm punishes purposeful as well as non-purposeful conduct?
It's our position that it punishes purposeful conduct.
Just purposeful?
Yes.
Well, I don't understand. I'm lost. You said it was the aggravated discharge statute that just punished purposeful conduct. Mm-hmm. And the reckless endangerment punish reckless conduct.
They're not mutually exclusive, though, Your Honor. You can, and...
No, but you're saying they're the same. What's the difference?
The difference is you can...
You're saying there's no difference in mental state?
No, the difference is in order to qualify for the tougher punishment under the aggravated discharge of a statute, your discharge of a firearm has to be you have to intentionally fire a handgun in an occupied building or vehicle.
So is that the difference, the building or the vehicle? Is that the only difference between the two?
No, the mental state as well, intentional.
What's the difference in the mental state? You just said reckless endangerment was intentional also. What is the difference?
In the mental state is applies to the consequence, not the act.
What do you mean?
Knowing that that a car was occupied, knowing that a building was occupied, and firing the gun at that occupied vehicle.
Well, that's the building and the vehicle part of it, but so far as the gun is, in both cases, you're intentionally pulling the trigger.
That's right.
So it excludes Judge Easterbrook's case. Someone drops the gun and it goes off.
I believe so.
So that statute doesn't deal with, it deals with non-purposeful conduct as well?
The reckless discharge of a firearm? Well, I believe it does pertain to purposeful conduct insofar.
Pulling the trigger.
Yes.
But the consequences, you have to be reckless with respect to the consequences.
That's right.
Meaning what exactly?
Well, as it's defined, that you're consciously...
The definitions don't do anything. Can't you put it in everyday language?
Yeah, without necessarily intending to, you're endangering the physical safety of another person.
How much? Does that have to be a lot of endangering or a little endangering?
Substantial, Judge.
What does that mean? You fire a gun in the air, is that enough?
No. The courts have addressed that. The Illinois courts have addressed that, and I've cited that on page 12 of the brief. Firing a gun in the air in an occupied residential neighborhood does fall within the reckless discharge of a firearm statute. If, for example, you were in the middle of Lake Michigan with no one around or an open field and you fired in the air, that would not be reckless discharge of a firearm. It's our view, Your Honors, that reckless discharge of a firearm involves purposeful and aggressive conduct and also presents a serious risk of physical.
There's one issue that your opponent discussed in his brief, but you didn't, I didn't see any mention of it, and that's the question, whether the judge thought that the bottom of the guideline range was 63 months when it was really 57. And there's a sentence which suggests that he intended to give him the low end, as he put it, of the guideline range.
Yes.
So what about that issue? If he misunderstood, if he intended not 57 or 60, not 63 months, but the low end of the guideline, whatever that would happen to be, after he'd made all his adjustments, why wouldn't that be a reversible error?
Well, I think the district court's sentence reflects its intent.
Yes, I know, but if his intent was to give the bottom of what he calculated to be the guidelines range, and he thought the bottom was 63, and it's really 57, how can we be confident that if the error were pointed out to him, he'd say, well, I don't care, 63 is what I want to give?
Just by giving deference to the court's analysis and the fact that...
But if his analysis leads him to the conclusion that he wants to give him the low end of a range that begins at 63, but actually it begins at 57, isn't it possible that the judge, if the error were pointed out to him, said, well, I did intend the low end of the range, now I understand it's 57, not 63, so I'll give him 57?
To answer your question directly, it's possible.
Well, then shouldn't the case be remanded?
Not because of the possibility, Judge. I think the record taken as a whole.
Well, you didn't even address the issue.
Yeah.
Did you?
No, I don't
think it's in your brief.
No, it's not. I see I'm out of time. Unless there's any questions, I'll take my seat.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.